I'm kind of baffled by the origin of the phrase, don't get your hopes up. I did some research on the idea and found a lot of comments one way or the other on that phrase, but nothing definitive about where it came from, who might have said it, or the first historical context in which it was used. That really doesn't matter at this juncture, though. What matters is that the idea exists loud and clear. It seems to be firmly embedded deep in the fabric of our culture. I've explored this idea for years with my clients, asking them where they got that idea and what it means to them. Most of them say, I don't know, never thought about it. I just used it. And when pressed further to explain what it means, most people tell me that if we hope for the best and the worst happens, it's much harder to take. But if we don't hope for the best, then if the outcome is not good, we will be less disappointed. Something like that, anyway. And then they go on to say that they brace for the worst, and then if something better happens, they're pleasantly surprised. So loosely interpreted, if we don't get our hopes up, then somehow that lessens the blow of disappointment or the pain of devastation if things turn out bad. Oh, really? And what kind of scientific study is that based on? I can answer that quickly. None. There is no evidence anywhere that this is true. And as a matter of fact, there is far more evidence to the contrary. I don't have access to a functional MRI or some other sophisticated imaging equipment, but oh, sometimes I wish I did. I am 100% sure that I could prove scientifically that if you took two groups of people, had one group expect the best and the other expect the worst, and then subjected them to the worst, now that wouldn't even be ethical, so we'll just have to imagine it, you would not find that the group who expected the best would have a much higher spike in stress responses than the group who expected the worst. In fact, I'm quite sure the opposite would be true. And I'm not basing this on just some wild guess. I'm basing this on an understanding of the human brain. The group that expected the worst is most likely to be closer to the threshold of triggering diffuse physiological arousal, or better known as fight or flight. Why? Because they've been consistently inching themselves closer and closer by expecting the worst. The group who is truly expecting the best is going to have a lot farther to go to hit that threshold. Now, I can't prove this with any hard data, but I can prove it using reliable anecdotal evidence gleaned from 20 years of experience and over 10,000 hours of talking with clients. I can also prove it experientially. You see, I used to be that guy who was literally afraid to get my hopes up. That phrase was very much embedded into my internal narrative in my own head until one day a very wise mentor pointed out to me the ridiculousness of that notion. This phrase has a close cousin as well, and that is, let's be realistic, or the short form of get real. Now, where did that come from? I have some theories about that. I believe that when we're kids, we're allowed to be idealistic, dreamers, if you will. We find it amusing, don't we? When kids dream of being an astronaut or a movie star, it's cute and we play along. But then that kid hits school age, and all of a sudden daydreaming is frowned upon. And as he or she goes through the school system, idealistic thinking is systematically replaced with realistic thinking. And as one progresses through life, the daydreaming fades and the career path comes into focus. Seriously, when is the last time you heard someone use the phrase, so let's be more idealistic about this? Now, I've talked with client after client over the years who had abandoned their dreams in favor of a realistic career, one that pays the bills. In fact, when I start talking about idealistic thinking, they often look at me like I have two heads. I literally have to teach my clients how to think idealistically. It feels foreign and scary. Like, if I do this, I'm going to lose control of my life or become some kind of Pollyanna-ish person, burying my head in the sand, ignoring unpleasant realities, and putting myself in a very vulnerable position. We seem to be so afraid of being vulnerable. So much so that it can literally paralyze us. But the truth is, there's a lot of power in vulnerability. Now, I'm not going to even begin to explain that here. I'll leave that up to Brené Brown. That's Brené with a B. She does a masterful job of explaining this concept. You can find her on YouTube very easily. Her TED Talk, The Power of Vulnerability. That TED Talk ranks number 5 of all time TED Talks with over 12 million views. It's good stuff. And I would highly recommend watching it. And you probably have some extra time on your hands to do that. It will inspire you, and it will support what I'm saying here. So how does this tie in to the COVID-19 pandemic? Well, funny, I was hoping you would ask. Last evening, I watched the president state that he hoped to have the country opened up by Easter, April 12th. That's truly getting your hopes up, isn't it? But before I go any further, I think I need to state very clearly here that I'm not a Trump supporter and I'm not a Trump hater. I'm what you would call pretty anti-political. I really don't like politics and I don't discuss them with anybody. I have no affiliation to any party. I'm pretty politically apathetic. Now, that doesn't mean I don't care about our country and leadership. I just very closely adhere to my own advice. If you can't change it, don't think about it. And that's it. That's the most you'll ever get out of me regarding politics, period. So, with that out of the system, let's get back to my point. What you might not know about Trump is that he's a big fan of Norman Vincent Peale, the late minister of Marble Collegiate Church in New York from 1932 to 1984. And Peale is the author of an infamous book, The Power of Positive Thinking. Now, Trump attended his church while growing up, and it's rumored that he would hang around after the service and have conversations with Peale about his sermons. This is Trump as a teenager. He was intrigued by what Peale was teaching about the power of positive thought. So it comes as no surprise to me that Trump infuses his rhetoric with positive thinking every chance he gets, especially at a time like this. Now, Trump may have a plethora of faults, but this is not one of them. Trump is spot on in his thinking and the message he is broadcasting to the nation. We absolutely need to get our hopes up and keep them up. And then there was Mr. Joe, Mr. Biden, highly critical of the hope that Americans might be back to work by Easter. His quote, "Trump should stop talking and start listening to the medical experts." Clearly, Joe thinks there's a real problem with Trump's hope and his positive thinking. Really, Joe? Are you that hell-bent on winning the election that in the face of this crisis, you need to take a shot at Trump's positive statement of hope? Or do you really believe that it's a bad idea to infuse hope into the country right now? Well, let's play that out. Let's take my little experiment from earlier. Let's say 50 people have hope that this country can open up by Easter, and 50 people have no hope of that. Scenario 1, the country opens up by Easter. The 50 hopefuls are super happy, and the 50 unhopefuls are super surprised. Scenario 2, the country doesn't open up by Easter. The 50 hopefuls are disappointed, and the 50 unhopefuls are happy because they really didn't have their hopes up. Really? Tell me you didn't bite on that one, did you? Or how about this for scenario 2? The 50 hopefuls are super angry at Trump, and in retaliation, they stop their social distancing and march back out into the streets, reopening their businesses and congregating in close quarters just out of defiance. Or the 50 hopefuls are now depressed because they thought it was going to happen and it didn't. Whereas the unhopefuls are mentally stable, rock steady in their unhopeful state of mind, while the hopefuls spin out of control. Now, if you know anything about human psychology and mental states, those scenarios are most unlikely. Here is the most likely outcome for scenario two. The hopefuls are disappointed, for sure, but the unhopefuls are just as disappointed. You see, being unhopeful does absolutely nothing to mitigate disappointment. The hopefuls quickly rebound with a new hope. How about Mother's Day, May 10th? You see, they reset their hopes and they lock right back into their hopefulness. The unhopefuls, well, they continue down their rock-steady path, refusing to get their hopes up until they are sure that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Listen carefully to what I just said. Until they are sure. Let that sink in. Hope is mutually exclusive to having to be sure. It's one or the other. So let's play this out just a bit further. Let's say this goes to 5 months, the time frame that many are predicting it might. The hopefuls will have to reset a time or two, and the unhopefuls will have 5 steady months of unhopefulness, right? Let's peek beneath the hood. The hopefuls will have 5 months of serotonin, dopamine, and acetylcholine pumping through their systems and at a much higher ratio than the adrenaline, cortisol, and epinephrine that will be dominating the unhopefuls' systems. And if you don't think that having your hopes up or down helps to regulate those systems, guess again. That is not conjecture. That is scientific fact. Not only are the hopefuls feeling much better on average, but their immune systems are revving much higher at the same time. Now, without getting too deep into the physiological weeds here, what I'm saying is that the autonomic nervous system, the system that controls our physiological responses, works best when the parasympathetic branch is engaged. Think serotonin, dopamine, and acetylcholine. Think calm and happy and hopeful. When the sympathetic branch is engaged, think adrenaline, think cortisol, think epinephrine, think fight or flight, think scared, think hopeless. The system just doesn't work so well. And the reason is simple. When the sympathetic branch is engaged, and by the way, they cannot both be engaged at the same time, it's one or the other, then we are ready for war. Precious resources are being mobilized for fighting or fleeing, for surviving. Hence, all of the subsystems, like our immune system, for example, are compromised to some degree. If we're trying to survive an attack, the immune system is going to do us little good in that moment. And we really don't need the digestive system either. Think butterflies in the stomach, loss of appetite, digestive problems, eventually ulcers. Simply put, unhopefulness is much harder on the system than hopefulness. 5 months of unhopefulness is going to be pretty exacting, Joe. Are you sure you really want that? Or is it just another opportunity to try and make Trump look like a jackass? So once again, we're back to a task. Put some very hopeful thoughts in your mind. Put them in your mouth. Put them on your phone. And then put them in your ears. A steady diet of hopefulness is what we all should be gorging on right now. Trump, you get an A+ on this one from me. So take a page from Trump's playbook here, which is actually a page from Peel's playbook. which likely came from St. Paul's playbook. And he could have gotten that from King Solomon. The power of positive thinking has been mentioned from practically the beginning of written history. So think positive and take charge, my friends. Take charge.